tweet at TodaySOR.
Week one of the New World Order, and in the days since the vote to leave was revealed, British politics has thrown up votes of no confidence, contests for leadership, and of course the shock announcement from one Boris Johnson that he would not be counted now as a contender. This after his presumed ally, Michael Gove, the Secretary of State for Justice, decided to run himself. To take a look at the key figures who will form the future of the Tory party one way or another, I'm joined now in studio by Sam Smith, a columnist with the Irish Mail on Sunday, and also a former colleague and still a friend of Boris Johnson. Also with me, Zoe Healy, a former media advisor to the woman who is now expected to become, or tipped strongly to become, the Queen of the Tories. That's Theresa May. Good morning to you both. Thank you for coming in. But first, I want to go to Stanley Johnson, who's on the line, father of Boris Johnson. Stanley, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. I'm at least 1,000 miles away because I'm, you know, in the middle of the Aegean, so I'm not sure if you can hear me all right.
We can hear you perfectly, loud and clear, Mr. Johnson.
That's good.
Your initial reaction, pardon me, to Michael Gove's leadership announcement was et tu, Brute. In other words,
yes. Well,
your son was stabbed in the back.
Going back a little, if I could just put this in context, earlier this year set up a group called Environmentalists for Europe, so I was very much on the Remain side. Boris came in as the leader of the Brexit campaign. We agreed to differ. I thought that we could sort out the problems by staying in. He thought we couldn't. That is water under the bridge. We are where we are. He then led the Brexit campaign, had the referendum results, and I then made it absolutely clear I was supporting him as a potential leader of the Conservative Party and therefore a potential Prime Minister, and warmly supporting him. So I do want to abuse your listeners of any thought that there's a kind of intra-family split at that moment. No, there's not. We were behind. So I was, yes, I was here in Greece, obviously no television here, but I was listening to it on Skype, and I was as shocked as many people, I think, were when Boris announced that he would, as it were, not put his hat in the ring at the last minute, and Michael Gove did, yes, and that's why I made that comment. Et tu, Brute, which good Irish listeners will know came from, you know, Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. Whether Caesar actually said et tu, Brute, I think is a matter of some controversy. Anyway, there you go. Three short words, and I still stand by them.
Did Boris have a chance to call you to tell you before he made that statement publicly yesterday?
I don't think he did. I can tell you it's not easy to get through to me here in Greece. But my understanding is that he you know, very much did it. It was pretty much at the last moment anyway. I don't think he had a huge amount of notice from Michael Gove on this point. Anyway, we are, Sean, the crucial thing now, and I'm glad that you have a senior advisor to Theresa May with you. The crucial thing now, it seems to me, is that whoever leads the Conservative Party must, as Cameron said when he announced his resignation, absolutely respect the will of the people on this affair. So I was very pleased to see Mrs. May, as it were, being quite clear that she was going to take this immigration issue very seriously and really try to do what the Brexit people promised to do. I'd just like to make one other point, because I am talking now, of course, to Ireland. Ireland being, as it were, one of the remaining 27. I have to say, and I know that sounds pompous, I don't think we needed to be where we are, because had the EU shown more flexibility on the immigration point, not just for Britain, I think many countries in Europe, or possibly even Ireland, recognise that the time has come to take another look at the free movement rules. They aren't fit for purpose, it seems to me, at this moment. They should have been looked at, and a serious promise from our 27 partners and the Commission might honestly have derailed the whole referendum concept. But there you go. We are where we are, and Mrs. May has to deliver now a serious and substantial exit package to the British people.
Can you just explain?
And our partners.
Yes, and that's obviously something that politicians both here and in London and indeed in Brussels as well and elsewhere will hope can be brought about. But I'm wondering just about Michael Gove, because there are suggestions that he actually helped to persuade Boris, your son, to adopt the Brexit stance and be part of that campaign. And in fact, Boris was the one who swung the voters because he was able to appeal and connect with them in a way that Gove wasn't.
Well, there are several hypotheses in that. In that statement, I think Boris was genuinely a Eurosceptic. I've known him a long time, as you can imagine, being his father. I worked with him in Brussels. I was there in the European Commission. He was there as the correspondent for the Daily Telegraph. He, as I say, virtually invented Euroscepticism. So that's on one point. I don't think this was a Johnny-come-lately position from Boris. But on your second point, did Boris swing it? I would say yes. I would say he probably did. He certainly had a huge impact, possibly more than Mr. Gove himself. So if you wanted to be cynical, you could say that Boris, in a sense, carried Gove, and then Gove has jumped off at a crucial moment. I don't need. We need to go on to, further on that, because I'm the silver coach of environmentalists for Europe, and we do see a huge. And I've dealt with the Irish environmental agencies, like Ann Forest and things. They are tremendously important, and we've all worked together on, for example, the EU's Natura 2000 program with Irish bogs and heaven knows what. And I would really be sad if some of these good things were now fell through the cracks. That said, and I don't want to repeat this, that said, we do have to address the freedom of movement issue, and I don't think Britain at this stage can afford to say, in order to keep the freedom of movement, thing and the single market access, we're going to forget about the immigration. So I don't think we can afford to do that.
In other words, that the priority in your view is to keep the single market or access to it and to compromise?
No.
Or the other way around?
No, my position is do not put keeping access to the single market at the top of your list of priorities. I don't think that'll run with the electorate which voted on June the 23rd. You have to, if you're standing now as a Tory leader, if you're going to be an effective British Prime Minister faithful to the mandate of June 23rd, you actually have to deliver substantial reductions in net migration into the UK.
And just coming back to your son Boris's political career, do you think the moment for him to become Prime Minister has now passed?
Sean, it's certainly passed for the moment.
Do you think he would have been a good Prime Minister?
Well, of course he would. I said so in a statement I put out when people were raising questions as to where I stood. He's an extraordinarily talented man, as you know, an extraordinary ability to inspire and persuade. And I do also know, having been in the policy game for a very long time, that as Prime Minister, you are not freelancing. You're surrounded by a host of advisors who don't let you make mistakes. And that is just the nature of the work. You're a Prime Minister. You are propped up.
Yes.
You're propped up by solid people.
Yes, but the reason I'm asking is because one of the reasons that Michael Gove gave for deciding to stand himself was because he came to the conclusion that Boris effectively wasn't up to the job.
I think that is a little rich. I think Michael Gove alluded to a Daily Telegraph column which Boris had written last Monday, which appeared to, as it were, backtrack on the freedom of movement issue by saying, well, maybe in order to keep the access to the single market, we have to, go soft on our immigration controls. Well, A, that was possibly a tenable thought, but B, anyway, Gove, as I understand it, had sight of that text. And C, I make the more general point that when you're Prime Minister, you're not trying to write something in half an hour. You have a lot of people out there to make sure the words are finely tuned.
And I'm not sure if you've spoken to him since, but to Boris since he announced his non-candidacy. But if you haven't, what did you say to him? And if you haven't, what will you say to him when you speak to him next?
What I will say to him is, well done, fantastic. You did an absolutely brilliant job in the referendum campaign, putting some really vital issues on the table, and those issues were the sovereignty issue. It is an important issue. The democracy issue, which is related to that. You put the immigration issue on the table, and you also put what you might call the direction of travel issue on the table. Are we really sure that this ever more integrationist approach, which, you know, appears to be so beloved at Brussels, is the right direction? That was why I differed from him. I said, look, if you are bothered, worried about all these things, the thing to do is to stay at the table, seize control, to use that Brexit word, seize control, but control from within and try to steer the ship in a different direction. It didn't turn out that way. But I hope he'll have a holiday now. He has many other talents, as you know. He's a very fine writer, a very fine journalist, and something of a painter too. This isn't the end of it.
Yes, and I don't want to labour the point, but just in case I'm slightly misquoted or didn't quote accurately Michael Gove fully, just here's that brief extract from what he had to say yesterday.
My belief was that Boris could not build and unite the team required in order to take this country forward, both to implement the result of the European referendum last week, but also to provide the strong collective leadership, the team captaincy, that this country requires.
That's what he had to say. Do you find that hurtful, Stanley?
Yes, I do. I do find it hard. As I say, I think the word I used a moment ago was a bit rich. A bit rich. Let's see how far Mr. Gove gets with his bid for the leadership.
Yes, I think one of Boris Johnson's close colleagues said that there's a very deep pit reserved in hell for Michael Gove.
Hey ho! I'm not going to comment on that. Not in, you know. I know.
Politically speaking, anyway.
Irish people. No, I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
Very nice of you to tempt me. I just say there is a wonderful opportunity out there now for Mrs. May to, to show that she has fully grasped the challenge. And indeed, from my point of view, I do recall that she was a very well-informed shadow Secretary of State for the Environment. So that's a piece of good news.
OK, Stanley, look, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us. That's Stanley Johnson, father of Boris Johnson, who is not going to be the Prime Minister because he's not going to be the Tory leader because he's not standing, to the great surprise and shock of many people when he made that announcement yesterday. Stanley, thank you indeed for joining us. Back in studio here, as I say, I'm joined by Zoe Healy, who worked for 5 years with Theresa May, and also by Sam Smith, a friend of Boris Johnson. Zoe, how did you come to be working with Theresa May?
I applied for a job in, I saw an advertisement in the Guardian newspaper, would you believe it was in the wrong section under television production, on the Guardian media jobs. And I flew over to London to interview for the role, which just said that it was Conservative Party press officer. It was about the size of your thumb, this ad. And when I went over to Westminster for the job interview, it was only during the interview that they actually revealed to me that the job was with Theresa May.
Now, you had a background here in political PR.
Yes, I did. I had worked for 4 years in the Fine Gael press office under the leadership of John Bruton, and then Michael Noonan for a few months, and I went off to Australia for a year and worked there, and I moved to London then. I wanted to move to London, so I was really chuffed and delighted to have been chosen by Theresa to be her media advisor in her role as party chairman.
Right, and that was a 5-year stint you did with her. Was it working with her all of that time?
Yes, she was in the role as chairman for about 3 months. For a few months before I came over, she had also famously delivered her speech at a party conference, calling them the Nasty Party. I worked with her as when she was in her role as party chairman. I was there for the 2005 general election. You may recall then Michael Howard did a reshuffle, and she was actually given two roles in the shadow cabinet of environment, as Stanley Johnson mentioned, environment and transport. She was replaced as chairman by Liam Fox and Maurice Sachi, and the joke in the Westminster bubble at the time that it took two men to do a woman's job. I did stay on with Theresa. I went on to work under Francis Maud when he became chairman, and continued to work with her under David Cameron's leadership in her various roles.
So what kind of person is she? Tell us all about her.
Everyone keeps asking me that. People are saying, is she the new Iron Lady? And I think she's, I was thinking about this this morning, saying she's Titanium Theresa. And I, you know, not many people know her in Westminster. they think she keeps to herself, that she is a loner. But, you know, over even just in the last few days, I've been talking to former colleagues in London, those that still work for her very closely, and others who have moved on, but who are running now to be by her side through this leadership campaign, who are dropping, you know, from their jobs to give up their time to ensure that she becomes the next leader of the Conservative Party and the next Prime Minister.
OK, so she's not one of the lads, she's not one of the late night drinks in the bars.
No, she's not at all. And I think that actually annoyed her party colleagues, her parliamentary party colleagues, that she wasn't hanging out in the bars in Westminster.
OK, well, what's she like to work with? You saw her at close quarters.
I did, and, you know, part of her role as party chairman is slightly different role to party chairman here in Ireland. And a lot of it is going up and down the country, banging the drum. So we spent a lot of time touring around the country. And the response she got from people that she met, from the constituency associations to people in hospitals, schools, prisons, you know, people that we meet, you know, really warm to her. She is warm, she is fun, and she does have that steely determination. What I really liked about her from the get-go is that she takes advice. And I've worked with many politicians here and in the UK who, you know, don't take the advice of those that are hired to advise them. But she also...
Mind you, Mrs. Thatcher always said that advisors advise, ministers decide.
That's it. And she is her own person. And what I know that she will do is she will take the advice, but she will also listen to her gut. She is her own person, and she knows what she needs to do. And, you know, she always takes the long term view. And I think that she has shown this in her tenure as Home Secretary, and also through the Brexit, the EU referendum campaign, of taking the long term view.
Right. And you said a very interesting thing there, that she, as party chairperson or chairman, did a lot of touring among the units of the organisation. We think the chicken and chip circuit here. Does she have a head start in terms of knowing the electorate and the electorate knowing her? Because ultimately it'll come down to two names, and then that'll go out to the wider party.
Absolutely. She does have that, you know, in her favour, that she has, you know, been out and about, and the people in the constituency associations know her. She is probably more well known and recognisable than Michael Gove. From, you know, the grassroots, she's very popular with the grassroots. I think that a lot of people after her nasty party, they agreed we needed to hear this, Theresa, and we needed to make the party more reflective of Britain. And she was certainly there.
She has one slightly, you might call it a zany attribute. That's her interest in footwear. I mean, she's been described as the Imelda Marcos of British politics. Now, I wasn't aware of this until
Sam and I, of course, were talking about this earlier.
You've noticed this, Sam, yeah.
Well, I remember ringing Zoe about that at that time, among other matters. She is a formidable person. Now, I did speak to somebody this morning who said... Well, they said if Theresa becomes the leader, and she is the favourite, jokes will be outlawed. And she says she will be Maggie on Mogadon, which was the idea. They think
not
she'll be dull.
you would dispute that. I mean, did look very authoritative. I mean, just even with the picture on the screen across us yesterday, the sound turned down, you knew this was a woman who certainly had a plan.
Yes,
and
she
looked it anyway.
And she always has the plan. And just, I have to say, I know about the shoes. And I sometimes go, gosh, you know, we always talk about women in politics. We always talk about the appearance, the shoes. But with Theresa, she didn't mind that. You know, and talking about her presence. But Theresa used to joke, and it was actually a nice icebreaker for when she met people, you know, when she was touring around the country. And she said, I must be the only politician in Britain that when I walk into the room, everyone looks at the ground, you know, as if they're, you know, shying away from her.
She's very
really
tall,
just,
isn't
it's
she?
Really just to see what shoes she's wearing. She is tall, yes, absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Sam, before we start talking a little more about Boris Johnson, whom you know quite well, I just want to take a short clip from Michael Heseltine speaking to the BBC. I mean, this is political wrath. It's undiluted in the aftermath of such a dramatic morning of politics yesterday. Some of the harshest criticism from Boris and Gove Cove came from Michael Heseltine, a leading figure, as we know, in the Tory party, an MP for 35 years, former Deputy Prime Minister under John Major, and who held that seat in Henley, which is, I think, subsequently occupied by Boris Johnson. And Heseltine told the BBC that Boris Johnson would now have to live with the shame of what he has done, and that Michael Gove's sudden U-turn yesterday is a contemptible move.
He's ripped the party apart. He's created the greatest constitutional crisis of modern times. He's knocked billions off the value of the nation's savings. He's like a general that led his army to the sound of guns and at the sight of the battlefield abandoned the field. To the claims of his adjutant, who said he wasn't up to the job in the first place, I have never seen so contemptible and irresponsible a situation.
Tough words, Sam, but I suppose you wouldn't expect an awful lot less from the Tories at the height of battle.
No, I think Henry VIII was the first Tory, as far as I can remember. They have a taste for blood. But I do remember Michael Heseltine saying much the same things about John Major at one time, who, whatever he is, I do not think he shares those. No, I can imagine why a lot of Tories would be mad at Boris Johnson. And when I say Boris Johnson, I'm certainly not a particular political supporter, but he was a good friend insofar as that he was a regular guest. He was the London correspondent of a radio show that I did on Sunday mornings. And we became very good friends. He invited me to London that when he was, running for re-election to be London mayor. London is a Labour city, and he won that election twice. So he is a serious politician. You know, I really think it's unfair when people say that he's somehow trivial.
Yeah, just on that point, we had Tommy Gorman on the programme earlier in the week. Now, Tommy, like you, knew him as a journalistic colleague, and he worked at the same time as Boris Johnson was in Brussels. Here's some of what Tommy had to tell us about those times.
He's bright. He's very, very colourful. But Sean, he's celebrity territory. He's Strictly Come Dancing. He's Big Brother House. Is he the person who has thought this through from beginning to end as to where it's leading? I actually don't think so. And I think it's fascinating that the weekend when, I'd say, people were tearing their hair out as to what to do, when even the likes of George Osborne was trying to steady the ship in terms of being in touch with ministers from finance for the different European countries and bankers, that Boris was writing a column and he had time to play a cricket. That's Boris.
What do you think, Sam?
Well, he's not like a lot of the other politicians. I suspect that's one of the reasons why he's so popular in the UK.
Yes, but does he have what it takes? And this is what the whole thing turns on, to be a prime minister.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how anybody would know until they're in the job. But he was a very, very successful mayor of London. Now, being mayor of London, I suspect, is not as onerous as being prime minister of Britain. But I do think he is a serious person, despite his almost compulsive joking. And, I thought that Michael Gove yesterday morning did him a great disservice in one way. Now, he was quite entitled to go for the big job, but I think he should have called Boris Johnson first, and he didn't.
Yes, there's dispute about that. They say he tried to reach him, but again, Boris's people saying, well, no evidence of
missed phone calls.
Yeah.
Under no illusions, I don't think Michael Gove just had this, moment yesterday morning, a few minutes before everyone was declaring that they were contesting the leadership election. You know, they've worked very closely for the last few weeks during the EU referendum. He must have had these views before.
And Michael Gove has an ambitious wife, I think, isn't
it? Yes, and there's also a suggestion that Gove, and there's the dark suggestions being made that George Osborne, the Chancellor, was part of this, that he and Gove have been conniving to bring about this particular moment.
And that's the Westminster bubble rumours.
Well, what do you think?
I don't know is the answer, because I was actually asking about that just with my former colleagues, and people aren't really saying much about that. But they are angry. They are angry at Gove. We're talking about shoes. I think Gove put the stiletto into Boris Johnson's back.
Oh, he did.
Just when he thought it would be the right moment, just to actually really damage him.
Do you think if Boris Johnson had been in the field saying there was no Gove, because that was not expected, if it came down to Theresa May versus Johnson, who would have won?
I believe it would have been it would still have been Theresa May, and I think that people within the party are cross at him for the way the campaign was run, and I think that a number of the, as I say, the grassroots have thought they've reached their clown ceiling, you know.
Did you ever get the sense though that she had ambitions to lead the party when you were working with them, with her?
That's a toughie. I think that Theresa, you know, it would have been suggested to her. We never talked about it. However, I think that she was, as I say, always taking a long-term view, and she's always done what's in the best interests of the party first, and also now she's thinking about the best interests for Britain. I don't think she had the leadership ambitions. She's always just got on with the job.
Is she ruthless?
I wouldn't say ruthless, because I think that has negative connotations.
Tough.
She's tough. She has a steely determination, and I think she has the cool competence. I think she's proven. She has the experience. And I think that she will make an excellent Prime Minister.
Did you ever talk to her about Ireland?
We did, of course. We talked about the fact as well that I was the only Irish person working for the Conservative Party at the time. We talked about Ireland, and we also talked about the fact that a number of even her parliamentary party colleagues seemed to be quite unaware of what was going on in Ireland, and what was going on in Parliament here, what was happening in relation to Ireland and our relationship with the EU as well.
That was something she did have an interest in.
She did, certainly.
Maybe that will stand to us. You could be the go-between from between Dublin and London when all of this settles down. We'll leave it there for now. Zoe Healy, former press officer with Theresa May, and also my thanks to Sam Smith, columnist with the Irish Mail on Sunday. We'll be talking about the Battle of the Somme on the centenary of the start of that, the 1st of July 1916. All that after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.